some criminals consider that they are businessmen, simply dealing with commodities that are not accepted in the global trade. And the thing is that they have a tendency to disrespect the rules. So they don't play with the normal rules that you and me will play with.
En fait, quand vous êtes sur un dossier,
when you are on a case like this, you have the end of a loose thread that you pick at until it unravels. Once you have started pulling on that thread, you keep an eye on it until it unravels all by itself.
The criminal was very creative, trying to remain below the radar for the law enforcement of Ukraine and France. But what happened, and together with the French colleagues, we have been able to locate him to do through relevant operational combination to confirm and establish his identity.
Welcome to the Europol podcast, the official podcast of the EU Agency for Law Enforcement Cooperation. In this series, we shine a light on some of the biggest operations Europol has supported and how we continue to fight crime. Today's episode, targeting dark finances.
Such a waste, a pearl of heritage that passes from hand to hand and gets smaller with each passing.
Very disappointing that this castle is left abandoned and cannot be visited, even though it is magnificent.
Beautiful castle, but I'm sad that it's closed. It's a bit overgrown now, but there was still a little path we could walk around it. We only saw a couple of other people there.
What you just heard were a few of the recent online reviews for Château de la Rochepot. It's a beautiful 12th century castle in the Burgundy region of France. The neo-Gothic fortress is impressive, placed on high ground above the French village of La Rochepot, just a short distance from some of France's most revered vineyards. In years gone by, as many as 30,000 visitors would come to the castle every year. If you look it up on the internet, you will see for yourself how stunning the place is. However, as those reviews might have indicated, something has happened to this castle. Today, Château de la Rochepot is closed to visitors. Much of the original furniture has been sold, and the tourist attraction's future is uncertain. How did this happen? Well, to get to the bottom of it, we need to look at a complex case that saw Europol work with French, Luxembourgish, and Ukrainian police to uncover a multi-million euro international fraud scheme. This is the story of targeting dark finances.
I am Major Christelle Balavejder, and I am assigned to the Financial Crime Division of the Dijon Investigation Unit.
I am Jean-Louis Boilin, and I was a financial investigator at the Dijon Investigation Unit from 2017 to 2021, at which time I retired. I have been working on this file since the beginning.
Christelle and Jean-Louis are investigators from the French Gendarmerie, one of the two main law enforcement bodies in France.
Château de la Rochepot was the third most visited tourist site in Burgundy.
And it was a good local employer, too.
There was a groundskeeper, a tourist guide for visits, staff with several tasks for the upkeep, as well as gardeners.
With stunning features such as a roof covered with glazed burgundy tiles and multiple towers on a rocky outcrop overlooking the village of La Rochepot, the people living nearby are extremely attached to this castle. Historically, it was owned by an aristocratic French family, and it was restored in the 19th century, giving it a unique look and feel. However, this aristocratic family decided eventually to sell the castle, with one condition of that sale being the total respect for the site and its history. It needed a lot of repairs to revive its former glory, and they sought a buyer who would make that investment. In 2017, after 3 years on the market, it was bought up by a foreign investor for over 3 million euros.
Firstly, people had a lot of questions about the identity of the people. However, the only thing that mattered to them was for the chateau to be brought back to life and for tourism to continue in the region.
All sounds okay so far. The castle needed a buyer, and perhaps a rich foreign investor would be the one able to make that investment and preserve this gem of the Burgundy region. Complex financial fraud cases can be a little confusing, so before we go any further, let me introduce a few of the characters in this episode. First off, we have the Lord of the Castle. This person is the main suspect in the case, the foreign investor believed to be buying the castle, or if you're French, the chateau. Secondly, there's the manager, someone who was performing certain tasks for the Lord of the Castle. And then we have the affiliate. This is another individual who was working for the main suspect, our Lord of the Castle. And finally, we have the local. That's someone from the nearby area who Jean-Louis and Christelle will meet over the course of their investigation. Still with us? Okay, great. Back to the story.
Alors, a priori, le propriétaire du château
it appeared that the owner of the chateau was trying to make investments because he had various plans. He also purchased a luxury vehicle at that time. It was a Rolls Royce and he wanted to go for trips and offer wine tasting. He wanted to show people around the vineyards. He had plans.
However, soon there were indications that something was not normal about the new owner at Chateau de la Rochebeau. They were certainly living a lavish lifestyle as they were buying up artworks by famous painters such as Salvador Dali, as well as buying lots of jewellery, crocodile handbags, and other very expensive goods. And that's on top of enjoying drives through the Burgundy countryside in that Rolls Royce.
Mais personne ne connaissait,
But nobody really knew the owner of the chateau. The staff would always see this man giving instructions rather than the actual manager.
And that's not all. Tradespeople hired to begin the restoration work soon encountered issues when it came to getting paid.
Alors, ce qui s'est passé, c'est que
several tradesmen were at the chateau to carry out repair work. They carry out masonry and plumbing work. When they asked to be paid for the repairs, they could not get paid. They therefore started asking questions. That was what triggered the investigation and why it was decided to verify who the legitimate owners were and why the craftsmen could not be paid.
To listeners in the building sector, you may have had issues with clients dragging their heels on payments before. But when your customer is the type of person who can afford a castle that costs at least 3 million euros, it's very strange that they can't afford to pay the builders.
In addition to this, some articles in the press began to appear about the chateau's operation. Indeed, the first article appeared in Le Bien Public, our local paper, on 23rd December 2017. The headline was Chateau in turmoil, so it was already heralding problems.
The newspaper article referred to unpaid invoices, Chateau de la Rochebeau discredited. There were unpaid bills from electricians, plumbers, and workmen. There was also concern among the staff about not being paid. They had therefore brought proceedings before the courts, in this case, an employment tribunal.
Following that first newspaper article in December, Christelle and Jean-Louis opened an investigation in February 2018.
By then, it had sparked curiosity and to see how it operated. It was our job to do the initial investigation and to find out who the real owners were, the condition under which this chateau had been brought, and also why the employees were not paid along with the contractors who had carried out all the work at the chateau. What should be kept in mind is that a property investment company was set up when the chateau was purchased.
I would add that the legal setup of the companies involved in this chateau is on the whole quite standard. It was more the people themselves.
Oftentimes, with big purchases like a French castle, the purchasing is handled by a company which is set up for that specific purpose. And that's what happened here. A company was set up in Luxembourg and used to handle the purchase and ownership. However, the role of the individuals was indeed strange. For example, the Lord of the Castle had an affiliate who worked for them.
Next thing, he was heading up companies, and that was what drew our attention.
Over the course of the investigation, Jean-Louis and Christelle met a local, who lived in the village of La Rochebeau itself. They went to speak with the local, who said that they believed the new owner was from somewhere in Eastern Europe.
Even he did not know the identity of the real owner. There was a person he spoke to time called Rodolphe, but he didn't know his real identity.
While Christelle and Jean-Louis tried to find out who the castle owner really was, some of the unpaid employees were now taking matters into their own hands.
Yes, actually some members of staff went to the employment tribunals. The affiliate also went to recruit people in Romania to come and work at the chateau. Those people were undeclared workers.
The antennae of the gendarmerie investigators was proving right. Something was certainly going on. Let's recap. A company in Luxembourg bought the castle for 3 million euros in late 2017. There was an Eastern European person, apparently called Rudolf, who was our lord of the castle. However, the paperwork showed an affiliate of theirs as the company owner. Meanwhile, the lord of the castle's name couldn't be found anywhere on the documents. Soon, the tradespeople hired to perform work on the chateau were not getting paid, and the affiliate had hired workers to work in the chateau itself, but it turned out they were actually undeclared workers from another part of the European Union. No one was getting paid, and yet this mysterious lord of the castle was enjoying a lavish lifestyle in their Rolls Royce. So who was this lord of the castle? How was it that they could afford the castle, yet not afford their bills? Why did they replace the previous local workers with these undocumented ones? The two officers soon realized that this individual might have international connections. That's when Europol got involved.
Asset recovery is what is the most successful against organized crime. Because prison, I believe that prison for criminals is integrated as part of the risk. Being stripped from their assets is not an accepted risk. So this is extremely effective.
This is Frederick, one of Europol's senior investigators when it comes to financial and economic crimes.
My name is Frederick. I work in Europol. I've been there for a couple of years. And I work within the European Financial and Economic Crime Center.
Frederick's work sees him targeting the profits of criminal activities. By denying criminals the proceeds of their crimes, law enforcement can have decisive impact.
The example today, we had a case that started in May 2018 for us in Europol. But it goes back to 2015. So at that time, a small castle in Burgundy was sold for roughly 3 million euros.
Frederick was receiving information from the two gendarmerie officers via Europol's secure messaging system called Sienna. This is short for Secure Information Exchange Network Application, and it's a tool to exchange sensitive law enforcement information with data protection and security by design features. Police in all EU member states have a direct connection to this system, allowing us to safely communicate and share relevant data as we combat serious and organized crime.
And a man came in the castle and he was acted as the owner, at least he pretended to be the owner, even if he didn't have any official title. So there were questions because this man apparently didn't have official relation with the company owning the castle. So there were questions also about the acquisition of the castle.
Given that the company owning the castle was based in Luxembourg, a joint investigation began between France, Luxembourg and Europol.
So we sent the colleagues, they sent requests to Europol and to the countries. The very first answer that we received came from Luxembourg. Luxembourg disclosed just the shareholders of the companies that owned the castle.
Still no sign of the main suspect, the lord of the castle, on the papers from Luxembourg.
And also Luxembourg told us this company owns a Silver Cloud Rolls Royce. And that's the first element that we have. So now it's becoming a little bit more interesting. We have someone who behaves as the owner of the castle, but seems to be hiding his name behind the company.
So even the Rolls-Royce was owned by the company, not the lord of the castle. He was clearly keen to keep his name away from the property. This confirmed what Jean-Louis and Christelle had suspected. This was definitely worth investigating. While Frederick and the analysts at Europol sought more information on the companies behind the castle, the gendarmerie were doing the important work on the ground in Burgundy.
We carried out several financial investigations. We had already looked at how the accounts worked, and we had seen that there were no records of income from the chateau in the accounts. It was the local who wrote the notes on loose sheets, and we worked from that basis. we also realized that the chateau operated in an atypical way. For example, the bank card was in the name of the local, not in the name of the company. We also realized that a lot of personal purchases were being made using the local's own card.
For those without a financial background, if you've got a company credit card and all the purchases are being made in the name of someone else, that's a sign that the company account is being used as a personal piggy bank. That's because an individual can then hide their spending as company expenses, and there's no sign of them directly making the purchase. So Jean-Louis and Christelle headed back to the castle, hoping to dig up more information on who the lord of the castle was. The gendarmerie knew that they needed to get sight of the suspect themselves if they were to have any hope of identifying them. And in July 2018, 5 months after their first inquiry started, Christelle and Jean-Louis found an opportunity.
Yes, that's right. That happened on the 14th of July. We knew that there was going to be a medieval festival, which was announced in the press and through flyers. Maybe the real owner would visit that day.
It was time for a classic bit of police work, donning a disguise and heading into the field to try and spot the suspect. Dressed as tourists, with sun hats, cameras and sunscreen at the ready, Jean-Louis and Christelle headed to the medieval fair.
The two of us went there, not knowing anyone, and we took photographs of several people who were sitting at tables eating. We noticed that there were 7 or 8 people at one table.
The officers figured one of the people at this top table must be the owner. The list of faces was now pretty short. The job is to identify these people and figure out who was in charge. And then a lead came from a very unexpected place.
Identifying the chateau's owner was made a lot easier by a very common procedure, a failure to return children.
The gendarmerie had been notified about a separate filing involving our lord of the castle. According to that report, they had been looking after their children. However, when their mother expected the children to return home, they did not come.
He almost wanted to take them away from their mother, as he had started to send them to a school near the Chateau de La Rochebeau.
When the two officers looked again at their photos from the fair, they saw the face from that separate filing looking right back at them.
So then we sent a Siena message to bring Europol into the loop. There it was flashing in red, so then the Ukrainian authorities came forward and were very interested in our message and what it contained.
In the exchanges we had with the various authorities and states, that we learned that there was a warrant out and that he had officially been declared dead. He even had his ashes delivered to his wife. For me, it was a somewhat atypical investigation because of the personality of this character who had himself declared dead in an accident and even had had his own ashes delivered. That's something I'd never seen in my career. He obviously had something big to hide if he was pretending to be dead.
Turns out, the lord of the castle was actually a wanted man in Ukraine, with allegations involving a fraud scheme of roughly 12 million euros. However, before Ukrainian authorities could investigate, he had faked his death and the ashes had been delivered to the authorities. It was a convincing ruse, so you can imagine what the reaction would be like in Ukraine when they heard that this suspect was actually very much alive and enjoying the good life, building an art collection in his French chateau. The French reached out directly to Ukraine.
Vitaly Kasap, I'm the head of the Ukrainian Liaison Bureau here at Europol.
This is Vitaly, and he is the head of the Ukrainian Liaison Bureau here at Europol HQ.
I'm still colonel of the National Police of Ukraine, doing many things during my career, but mostly criminal investigations and international assignments abroad.
Although Ukraine isn't an EU member state, they are a close partner for Europol all the same.
Ukraine opened its liaison bureau at Europol in mid-2018 after we have signed and ratified the operational agreement on cooperation between Europol and Ukraine.
As you might expect, Vitaly and his colleagues in Ukraine were very surprised to see their suspect's name come in from the French investigators After all, their authorities had received a box of his ashes some years back.
Obviously, at this moment of time, the cooperation of Ukrainian law enforcement agencies with European ones is crucial. We can advise and work together to identify those criminals, to prosecute them, to dismantle their networks, which have also moved from Ukraine to European states. This is not the only case where we see the Ukrainian national doing certain criminal activity, gaining some profits, and afterwards trying to escape and vanish in Europe, enjoying the lovely life there with a lot of money.
Like all international fraud scams in Europe and beyond, financial investigators and international liaisons like Vitaly need to be on the lookout for novel methods used by criminals to evade justice.
This case was very interesting because the criminal was very creative, trying to remain below the radar for the law enforcement of Ukraine and France. But again, what happened, together with the French colleagues, we have been able to locate him through relevant operational combination to confirm and establish his identity. And later on, we have been able to arrest him and prosecute further.
The modus operandi, namely pull off a massive fraud and then flee out of the country, is deployed the world over. However, not all suspects get their fake cremated remains delivered as they try and shake the police. And it did work for a while, until the gendarmerie got suspicious and started up the international cooperation.
These are corrupted officials who gain certain assets in Ukraine and trying to escape abroad. This case is one of a good example where we have been able to do this. In some other cases, criminals become very creative and skillful in hiding all of their assets gained, mostly through their criminal or corruptive activities.
However, in this case, the suspect, our Lord of the Castle, hadn't been quite skillful enough. With the photos from the medieval fair and the claims from his wife, the suspect had been identified, and now Ukraine had verified it. Our Lord of the Castle was actually wanted in Ukraine because they were a suspect in a corruption investigation showing that they might have embezzled over 10 million euros. How the mysterious new owner had been able to afford Chateau de la Rochepot suddenly became clear. An operational meeting was soon scheduled at Europol HQ for September 2018.
Yes, we did get a response like that. We immediately realized that we had to meet, so we set up an operational meeting at Europol headquarters with the Ukrainians and Luxembourg. We had identified him, that's one thing, but we hadn't located him. So we had to deploy trained personnel to monitor him and discover where he was. He was known under four aliases. His name did not appear anywhere in the Chateau companies.
With charges outstanding against the Lord of the Castle, including an Interpol red notice, Christelle and Jean-Louis came here to our headquarters in The Hague to plan an action day. The way action days are planned is through operational meetings. These are meetings here at our headquarters where all the involved law enforcement agencies come together and decide the best way to go after suspects. Ahead of the operational meeting, Christelle and Jean-Louis had carefully mapped out the ownership of the companies behind the castle purchase and who was in charge of each one.
The first thing was to present the case. The first thing was also to show Luxembourg and Ukraine how the companies had been set up, who did what in each company, who their main shareholders were, and how the company operated, as well as a presentation of the property investment company. After that, we looked at the question of financing. How had the chateau been financed? Who had set up the companies and where had they been registered?
It was also at this meeting where the French officers learned for themselves why our Lord of the Castle was a wanted man in Ukraine.
C'est au cours de ce meeting que
they told us in the meeting that he was at the center of a scam for 12 million euros. The scam in Ukraine seemed to have involved a company transporting urea, a type of fertilizer. The case had even gone as far as Switzerland, which is why the Swiss police then joined us in our investigations, as they had a report against him since 2015. Our investigation had therefore allowed the Swiss authorities to reopen the case.
A last country, Switzerland, was added to the list of concerned countries, and an action day was planned.
Personally, I was still in the egg and I was following the action from the headquarters. These are two of my colleagues who were deployed to Europol. Actually, the two case officers on the case on this investigation, a specialist and an analyst. And actually, I want to say two extraordinary colleagues who made a fantastic job on this case.
Frederick was coordinating things for the action day at Europol HQ. The plan was to carry out a top-to-bottom search of the castle so they could finally understand what was going on at Château de la Rochepot.
When we deploy colleagues on the spot, we usually bring what we call the mobile offices. So these are actually remote access to our databases. So we can access also our databases, the information that we have stored in Europol information systems, and we can check on the spot if this, whatever we find, it's with something that we already know. They were there with forensic capabilities. The action day was quite successful. The suspects were arrested. You can imagine that searching the castle takes some time, but it went really good. There were a lot of good surprises. The investigators, they found good wines, obviously, but also works of art. The famous Rolls-Royce that I mentioned that was owned by the Luxembourgish company was there.
During the search, the lord of the castle was arrested. Meanwhile, the amount of luxury goods found far exceeded what the officers had expected. As well as the stunning Rolls-Royce, they found the suspect's growing art collection, including pieces by established artists such as Salvador Dali, and some by lesser-known artists that the suspect thought would become more and more valuable over time. And that's not all. A lot of luxury jewellery, including a 20,000 euro pair of cufflinks, was found. There were also vast amounts of designer clothes and bags, with one crocodile leather bag alone being valued at nearly 60,000 euros.
But even more importantly, we found documents and phones that confirmed that this was indeed the king of the castle.
This was crucial. The suspect could no longer hide behind a web of companies. It was clear that they, somehow, had got together enough money to buy the castle.
They concluded the first phase and the first action of Europol in that case.
The huge seizures alone would not be enough to press charges. The important job now was to build the case against the lord of the castle, using all the data and paperwork gained during that massive search.
Then we were also asked by the French colleague to support the analysis of the data that they had retrieved. And this is the second, and I shall say, our best role. Europol as the persevering supporter, where we try to identify leads that can accrue to the proceeding, and then we forward intelligence to the colleagues.
Frederick was able to conduct analysis that helped the French to speed the case along. From the first call to Europol in May 2018, the suspect, our lord of the castle, had been arrested by that October.
In France, the suspect, the main suspect and his accomplices were convicted last year. So that's really satisfying. We discovered, thanks to international cooperation, legal basis to seize and to confiscate the castle. And so we could apply to this case proper asset recovery measures. And that's for us because we are leading the team dealing with asset recoveries. That's extremely rewarding. We were very happy with that.
As Frederick said earlier in the episode, criminals factor jail time in as part of the cost of doing business. But taking all their criminal profits away as well, this is not acceptable. And taking this approach in investigations is something that Europol is supporting more member states in doing, not least since we opened our Financial and Economic Crime Center in 2018. Thank you for listening. We hope you enjoyed this episode of the Europol podcast. Be sure to rate, review, and subscribe so you get notified about new episodes. You can also mail us via the Europol website. We'd love to hear what you think of the show.